This is our second half hour of Children Come First, and we're here today. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski with Patsy Tallarico of the PSEA, the teachers union, one of the teachers unions, I should say, in the state of Pennsylvania. And we were talking about the salaries of teachers and how people gripe, and I know I've had my listening audience call and talk to me about this. But what I want to talk about is not, I mean, the level. We expect teachers to go to school for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and keep on training. The new act says that teachers have to keep on training. We don't equate their salaries with it. And here we have a shortage of teachers, not just in the state of Pennsylvania, but across America. Can you talk to us about this shortage?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not going to do anything but get worse in the upcoming years. We're going to need about 2 million teachers by the end of the decade. That's about 60% of what we have currently. It's a great opportunity, if you look at it in a right way, to make sure that teachers are better prepared. You know, we're always in favor of not only having students have outcomes, but also for teachers. We, you know, the new teacher Act, the Professional Development Act that was passed, we helped with that. The way it came out in the beginning, it was just something that was almost impossible for teachers to obtain. But the way it finally came out, where it was 6 hours or of college classes or Department of Ed classes or 180 hours, we felt that this was obtainable in the 5 years that were given for teachers to get to professional development. We've always been in favor of that. But this is an opportunity to make sure that we get the best and the brightest into the teaching profession. And one of the ways that you have to do that is you have to make it attractive for those teachers to come into the profession. These are going to be teachers that are going to be taking on responsibilities that become greater and greater. You know, I started teaching many, many years ago. And when I started teaching, you had more cooperation from parents. You had more cooperation from the communities. And now it just seems that, as you said before, the teacher almost has to become a part of the family, one of the parents, as far as the socioeconomics go and the family situations go in the districts. So we have to do something in order to attract the best and the brightest. And I think we should make sure that these are the candidates we get to fill these teaching positions.
Well, I think what you're alluding to is something that I'm hoping will happen, and that we, because of the dramatic shortage, and it's not just teachers, it's principals and superintendents as well. It's at every single level. Who wants to be a teacher when you're constantly criticized? There is nothing. Who would want to be in a position where you are constantly a target? And I notice as I travel around the state, you know, all these newspapers are ready, willing, and able to jump on everyone if they do something wrong. But no one is talking about what's happening that's right. We don't reinforce the positive kinds of things. And there are wonderful things going on in the state of Pennsylvania.
This is one of the things we try to instill in our teachers. You know, sometimes we're reluctant to blow our own horns. And what you said is absolutely right. Every day there are things going on in a classroom that are fantastic, that are wonderful. And we have to make sure that that word gets out there. You know, it doesn't sell as many newspapers as it does something that has a negative connotation to it. But we have to also make sure that we do that. The comment you made about administrators, as far as superintendents goes, they're usually last 3 to 5 years anymore. And then, you know, they're looking for a new job. And once again, you know, if the difference between being an administrator, which is a 12-month job, and a teacher is not that great, with all that aggravation that comes with that, you're not going to get candidates that are going to want to go into that, because it is a lot of aggravation. It's a longer working period. So there has to be things that are done there.
Well, you know, you brought up another point here again. There's no continuity for the children, and we are making them responsible for the kinds of things that no one has control over. You know, how can you possibly make how can you possibly make a child and the school responsible when you have the influx of new students constantly, influx of new superintendent, new teachers? I mean, with this high mobility, these are all societal and cultural issues, and everybody is quick to blame everybody else. I was just amazed. I was in one of your major cities, and I noticed how the school board blamed the superintendent, the superintendent blamed the principals blamed the teachers blamed the parents, and everybody is blaming everyone else, and nobody's taking responsibility.
Well, you're absolutely right. Another thing that we are continually trying to build on with our locals and our members is the building of coalitions. If you don't build coalitions within the community where your school is located, with the parents, with the businesses, with the clubs, for example, the Rotary, Kiwanis, etc., and with the churches, you know, that's an area where a lot of people don't bring into the picture. But let's face it, you know, where do most of the people in the community meet? They go to church. They meet there for different meetings. So these are the things that have to be done. Instead of everybody blaming everybody, we've got to make sure the school board, the administration, the teachers, the parents, the whole community act together on these things. Because if they don't, then, you know, you break that one link in that chain. And who suffers? The children. And as I said before, you know, our primary goal is to make sure that those children come out of school prepared to go into society and become productive citizens.
Now, we have talked an awful lot about all of the social issues and cultural issues that exist in many of these school districts across the state of Pennsylvania. And one of the things that I personally am, are trying to make teachers accountable for training they never receive. For example, our teacher training institutions don't teach parents how to teach teachers how to work with parents or with the community or with the churches. We're content curriculum training them, but we're not training them how to do the other kinds of things that we expect them to do. So they know how to teach science and social studies and English and those kinds of things, but they're not adept at we're expecting them to write grants. We're expecting them to do all the things that they have never been trained to do, and that is unfair.
Absolutely. You know, this is the other side of the coin. We know that the colleges have to be more closely linked to what's been going on in the classrooms. You know, you can't put a teacher in a situation and to have something happen that it's the first time they've ever been exposed to it. And I know you can't go over every situation that's going to happen, but you have to have more pertinent training to what is going on. And then once that teacher gets in the classroom, there has to be mentoring programs for them also. You team them up with a more mature teacher, a teacher that's been there longer, and they have somebody that they can go to, that they can get advice from. You set up in-service programs that are going to be meaningful, that are going to talk about situations that occur. And this is an excellent chance to pick up those hours that you need for professional development. In fact, I give a lot of credit to some of our locals where they've set up in-service days so that if the teacher attends those in-service days, they have their hours in that five-year period. And it's meaningful, and it's also, you know, it doesn't cost, because if you take a look at what college courses cost nowadays, they're $400 or $500 a credit, and that's a lot of money when you're making some of the salaries that our early starting teachers are making now.
Well, I also want to take a little step back with the principals, because we don't train principals to be support to their teachers. And this is what they need. Again, we talk about them constantly being criticized and being bombarded from every direction on what they're supposed to do in their classrooms. And we don't train the principals to be support to those teachers in times of need.
Correct. And once, you know, if you take, for example, take a child that's playing Little League and he's having trouble batting or she's having trouble batting, what do? You take that child aside and you coach them. This is what we're saying. If you have a teacher that starts their career and they're having a problem in an area, you go and you mentor that teacher. You go over what their weaknesses are, and you work on those weaknesses to try to make them better at it. And what we're saying is, you know, you do that, you help coach the teacher, and if at some point during their career they don't seem to be able to make the grade at that, then we try to talk to them to maybe, you know, there would be a better career for them to try to take. We were never, ever in favor of keeping a teacher in a classroom that can't make the grade. But what we are saying is you have to make sure they have every opportunity to try to better themselves in the areas that they have weaknesses in. And that all too many times this does not happen.
And also, I heard from several teachers from around the state. Now, this is a time when everybody's going back to school. The week before school starts, they find out that they're teaching something totally different than they've taught for the last 5 years. The week before school starts, we all of a sudden now, instead of a physics teacher, we need a general science teacher, or we need, you know, a mathematics teacher, and they're teaching something totally different than they've been trained to teach. And, you know, you're expected to jump and do that and be perfect in the classroom and accountable and all that. And so, you know, most people don't understand that these are the kinds of things that happen within the school curriculum and within the school day. And I think if we train principals to be a little bit more compassionate and a little bit more perceptive of the kinds of things that are going to be happening, and of course, we don't know enrollments until they happen right before school starts, but at least we can be supportive of the teacher and not just say, here, this is what you need to do, go prepare.
That's absolutely right. Now, you know, there are going to be emergencies that prop up every so often whenever the start of school. Maybe a teacher has an accident and they can't start the school year, so there have to be adjustments made. But I was talking to a teacher the other day. They had one in-service day and then half a day with the kids, and the teacher already had an unsatisfactory rating. So for one of the visitations, and you know, I just couldn't fathom that happening unless, you know, I couldn't think of any reason why that might happen. But you're right. There has to be consideration given for giving a teacher time to prepare for what they're going to be doing. You know, let's face it, if you're preparing to come in and to be a math teacher at the beginning of the year, and all of a sudden, a week or two before you come in, or even earlier than that, you're told that you're going to be teaching another discipline, it's really not fair.
You were at the, first I'll let our audience know they're listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we're here today with Patsy Tallarico from the PSEA, the Teachers Union, one of the teachers unions in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, you were at the Democratic Convention, and I happen to be a both, and would you like to talk to us about comparing and contrasting the two candidates, since this is going to be aired right before the elections?
Yes, I would. I also attended the Republican convention. I was there for several days. As I said before, we work with the Republicans and the Democrats, and there were a group of moderate Republicans that we met with in Philadelphia that we work with, and we sort of are closer to their views than some of the other ones. But I was at the Democratic convention, and it was fantastic. I thought Al Gore's speech, he nailed it. I thought he said what had to be said, and I think he really means it. You know, whenever you do compare the two, you know, you have Bush more testing, just like the testing that we were talking about before, and Al Gore more help for the kids and for the parents to try to make sure that each of them achieve. You know, Bush is pro-voucher. Gore has made it clear that there will never, ever be vouchers while he is president. And just like with the educational empowerment, Bush is going through there with more and more penalties and for schools rather than going in and saying, look, let's make the class sizes smaller. Let's make sure that we can guarantee that these kids are going to have a fighting chance in order to gain the education that they need. We don't need any more of this rhetoric that we have been getting about the so-called educational experts. In fact, if you take a look at Texas, you know, he takes claim to the great progress that the children in Texas are taking. Well, most of those things were started when Ann Richards was governor. And I do give him credit for one thing. After, you know, he was in for a year or two and continued those things, but she's the one that started those original educational reforms in Texas. They still have 50% of the Hispanic population in schools that are dropping out. It's not as rosy a picture as he portrays it there.
One of the things that you commented on was schools, classroom size, but one of the things that most people don't talk about is school size. And I believe in business, when we have things that are unmanageable, we tend to downsize when things become unmanageable. But in schools, when things become unmanageable, we upsize, we make schools bigger, we consolidate. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think that a lot of the school districts that have consolidated and gotten larger and larger, in some cases, you know, the child becomes a number. They're not taken individually anymore. But that happens sometimes even in the smaller ones too. What we have to make sure we have is that we have enough people in order to monitor those children. For example, in the elementary grades, if you can look at those children and find the problems that they are having, it's easier to correct them there. But you have to have the proper personnel. You need guidance counselors in elementary. You need psychologists. You know, in my district, which is, we only have 164 teachers, but we don't have a psychologist that's employed by the school district. A psychologist is employed by the IU, and it takes months if you see a child that has a problem in order to get them tested to make a diagnosis of what the problem is. If these children can be found at an early age, and then proper steps be taken in order to correct whatever the problem is, you're going to have that child, you're going to have that child be saved. Once they get into the middle school or the high school, it's almost too late to do anything like that. But you need the resources to do that. And as I said before, sometimes it doesn't matter whether you have a large district or a small district. If you don't have the resources and you don't have, and I'm not just talking fiscal resources, but if you don't have the human resources there in order to take care of this, then, you know, those students are going to be at a disadvantage.
It seems to me that, and I've said this before on my program, the best thing we can do for education in the state of Pennsylvania is to return to a flatline management system, which means we give the classroom back to the teacher. We don't use, you know, we let them determine the curriculum. We let them look at the kind of students that they have. We have them work as teams. These, across the United States, the most successful public schools are those that have been given back to the teachers, and we'll let the superintendents do the managerial kinds of things, and the principal be the support, and the school board monitor and not be micromanaging the school districts, and legislators just pass legislation to support them financially. One of the other things I've noticed is at the Department of Education level in Washington, every time we eliminate money to the schools, we get another department in the Department of Education. It's ironic. Their money never gets taken back. They get bigger and bigger. But this flatline management, in my estimation, from what I've seen around the country for successful public schools, is the best way we can go to give back the classroom to the teacher.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, the other thing, in order to do that, you have to have the proper amount of time to be able to meet as a team, to be able to exchange ideas with your fellow teachers, to be able to do the best that you can for those children. And that's, you know, that's the other thing. If you don't have the time, if that's not built in to the day, then, you know, you're not accomplishing what you're there to accomplish.
Now, there is a great shortage not only of teachers, but of substitute teachers. What happens when the flu strikes teachers and, you know, there are 8 teachers out in the district and no substitutes? What happens in the school district?
Well, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, the class is sent to study hall and there's no learning that's going on. And also, what is being done also is illegal, is that somebody that's uncertified is brought in order to take care of the classes. But just let me give you a scenario. You know, today with the kids coming out of college that have college loans to repay, and that have health insurance that they have to get, hospitalization that they have to get, they can't afford to sit around and wait to be called to a job that's going to pay $60, and out of that $60, you're going to pay 20% of it in taxes and what else. Most of them are better off if they get a job waiting tables or working in a business somewhere, because sometimes they can get benefits and the money that they're going to make is going to be greater than what they're getting substituting. Once again, if you're going to do something that's going to be beneficial to education, it's going to cost money. They have to be a lot of, and another thing that some districts are doing that have the foresight is they're hiring a teacher for each building. And if there is nobody out on the day that teacher goes to that building, they're either sent to another building to sub, or they work on curriculum. They work on some things that are going to be beneficial to the educational scenario in that building. But you're right, something has to be done. And once again, looking for schemes such as using a student teacher, which is one of the proposals that was brought up, or using people that are uncertified to come in and do it, does not address the problem. It's at best a makeshift way to try to get the job done, and it is not, first of all, it's not legal, and second of all, it is offering nothing to those children that are in that class that have a right to have their information being given to them.
Well, we have certainly covered an awful lot of subjects and a variety of various issues. Before I get to last and final questions, I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to say, you know, whatever it is that you'd like to say to wrap up, perhaps something that I've neglected or whatever. But this, I'm going to give you these last few minutes to have the opportunity to summarize and to say whatever needs to be said.
I would just like to say that, you know, we know public schools are not perfect. We know that as long as you have public schools, you have to make sure that you try to keep them updated. You try to make sure that everybody is up on the latest educational technology, etc. But we are constantly trying to make sure that the public education system in Pennsylvania is the best. And we do feel right now that it is the best. You know, if you take a look at, as you said before, everybody's always taking pot shots. But reading scores are up since 1994. They've gone up. Math scores are up. And SAT scores, I believe it's in the math portion of it, are at a 30-year high this year. Now, it's not like they went up 20 points or 40 points, but they are right now at a 30-year high, and the English portion of the SAT and the ACT have also risen. So if you take a look at the number of children in Pennsylvania that take the SAT, it's almost 70% of the students that are in school. Now, when I was in school, if you were going to go to college, you took it, period, and no one else did. If you take a look at the other states, North Dakota is high. The other states that take it, and the percentage of the children that take it there, they're low. They're in the 10s or the 20%. So we are making progress. Once again, we're not saying that we're there yet. But, you know, graduates are up. Those getting college degrees are up. The dropout rate is falling. We have to make sure that dropout rate gets lower and lower every year. We have to make sure that we have ways to keep children in school. We have to make it appealing to them. Going to privatization, going to vouchers, and other means is not the answer, because all those things are going to do is to draw money away from the public schools. So safety is another thing. You know, as long as those children are in school, it's probably the safest place for them to be in any community. You know, one child getting hurt or getting shot is one too many. But in many of the communities throughout the United States and Pennsylvania, the safest place for a child to be is in a public school. And we are taking measures to make sure that those schools become even safer. We have teams that are throughout the state that go in for in-services and for teacher training to make sure that if a crisis should arise, they know what to do pre-crisis, in the middle of the crisis, and post-crisis, because those are all three areas where you have to make sure that everything is taken care of. So I want to thank you for having me on today. I enjoyed it.
Well, we still have a few more minutes, but I wanted to say something about our educational perspective. 100 years ago, everybody didn't go to college. Only about 15% of the population went to college, which is when we started core curriculum, testing, and all the other nonsense that we have. Today, we are expecting everyone lifelong learning and college. This is our expectation. But everybody isn't college material. Everybody isn't meant to go on to college. And yet, this is our focus for our educational system and the testing and everything else. I think what our basic problem in education is countrywide, not just Pennsylvania-wide, is that we cannot agree on what constitutes a good education. So blaming teachers and blaming people seems to be the out for what we don't have is a concrete goal for what, and I personally don't think every child is, I mean, I have plenty of children and not all of them go to college because they just don't, that's not their thing.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that our vo-tech schools, there has to be more support given to them. Some of the support in recent years has been away from the vo-tech. And I'll tell you what, those kids that go to vo-tech are being trained in areas where when they come out of there, they have a job, they have good salaries, and you're absolutely right about everybody not being able to go to college. The service is another area. You know, everybody is not going to be able to attend college. They don't have the means or else they're not interested in it. But we're always going to have jobs for those that go into a technical field, that go into a profession such as carpentry or bricklaying. Those are going to always be needed, and believe me, they do get some high rates of pay, especially when you need them to come around. Yeah, the plumber that comes to the house for $40, and then the meter starts running after that. But we do have to make sure that those children are taken care of also.
So this high emphasis on testing and this kind of skill really is something that we need to really look at, because every child is just not college material. And by goodness, my plumber and my car mechanic and my electrician certainly make a lot more than some of the college graduates that I know. And everybody wanting to get into computer technology and making $100,000 a year to start their first year. Which leads me to think, where is our economy going when we are focused on everyone having a college education? Who's going to be around to wait on tables and serve us in our restaurants? And who's going to be around to collect our trash and all the other necessary kinds of things? I mean, we really have to take a good look at education in terms of what we're doing.
You're absolutely right. And that brings us to another difference in the presidential candidates as far as the minimum wage goes. It's a shame that what some of these people that are going into these fields are paid per hour. Do you know what the minimum wage in Texas is? $3.35 an hour. Now, that's George Bush, who says that the minimum wage should be let up to each state individually to do their own. So, you know, that's below poverty. That isn't even poverty. But we have to make sure that we're going to be putting a wage that's going to be a livable wage in order to make people be able to function, be able to have a family, an apartment, or a house.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski with Children Come First. We've been for this hour with Patsy Tallarico, the president of the PSCA, the Teachers Union in the state of Pennsylvania. You may call us anytime at 877 toll-free at ProKids at 877 PROKIDS, or you may reach us at email ProKids, ProKIDS at RLC.net. That's ProKIDS at RLC.net. And join us again next week. We really appreciate it. And give your children a hug for us. Have a good day.